I'm Rico.
And I'm Jessica.
And this is the Always the Critic podcast.
And Tebakke Rambles podcast.
Where a couple of friends review the latest movies.
And Korean dramas. If you're wondering what's going on, we're in the middle of this mini spooky season over on Tebakke Rambles, and you're listening to a crossover episode. Rico, I know, hey! Rico is the OG co-host of Tebak, and even though his work schedule takes him away from being able to co-host, he's still producing every episode, and we usually talk about movies weekly on Always the Critic. So, Rico, how have you been? The last time you were here was Sweet Home for that review.
Yes, Sweet Home. Which would have fit perfectly in this season that you're doing right now.
Yeah.
So I've been doing pretty well, just, you know, watching as many movies as I can, which if you look at my output, it doesn't really seem like a lot.
No.
It actually seems like I'm not really trying, but I'm actually making an effort in trying to watch movies, trying to get out there and, you know, put my AMC A-list to good use.
Yeah, we went today and watched Hocus Pocus in theaters, which was super nice. I thought, oh, okay, like whatever, Hocus Pocus, it should be fun. But then I walked out and I was like, that was a really fun experience because the audience was packed. And we had this dude that was sitting in front in the row in front of us. I don't even know why he was there. He didn't come with any kids, any like spouse or anything. He was sitting in between two older couples, which I was like, okay, two elderly couple sitting in a Hocus Pocus, but okay. This guy was having the best time. He was laughing at all the jokes. He was into it. So it was a nice hot crowd.
That is pretty cool.
I know.
I love when a crowd, it's a good crowd.
Yeah.
Love a good crowd in movie theater. And speaking of hot crowds, next week, like, I got to talk to Daniel Romero. He's a friend of the show. He's been on the show and because he has tickets for the Swift concert movie.
So do I.
Exactly. So I need to get it from him.
Oh, so. Right. Because you're going to get his tickets, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm seeing it on next Saturday. So for those who don't know and maybe don't live in America, we're talking about the Taylor Swift Eras Tour concert movie, which is coming out in theaters and is single-handedly saving the movie theater this season because of the dual strikes for WGA and SAG-AFTRA. So we're glad to see Taylor doing a good deed here, and not for all of us, really, but excited to see the show again.
She's boosting everything. Boosting movie theaters. She's boosting the NFL.
I know.
Like, everywhere she goes, man.
I know.
It's crazy.
Okay, but this is like a huge tangent.
Yes,
so anyway, we're here to review the Netflix original movie that just came out. I had kind of saw the trailer and I was like, ooh, this looks good. And I showed it to you, Rico, and you were like, okay, like it looks pretty good. What did you think when I showed you this trailer?
I thought, okay, it looks like a fun action thriller type of movie, you know, where we get to see, you know, when a female lead kick ass, you know? And
yes.
So the movie that we're talking about, that is the movie Ballerina.
Yep.
It's on Netflix. It just came out. And I watched it last night. You watched it last night, I'm guessing, as well.
I watched it a couple hours ago.
Oh, a couple hours. Oh, so you're even more fresh than I am. Gotcha. So, yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that right now. But before we get started, if this is your first time listening, first off, thank you. And number two, go ahead and subscribe to your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And if you like us, go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars goes a long way for us.
Come and check us out on social media to stay up to date on our latest episodes and reviews. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Always Critic Pod. And for Tebakke Rambles, you can find us at Tebakke Pod. Lastly, if you're a fan, please consider becoming a patron. It is such a great way for you to get involved, ensure your support, and get a bunch of extra content. You can check out the page on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. We've gained a couple new patrons, so this is going to be a little longer. Thank you. Shout out to our patrons, Curtis Bale, Cindy CD, Alana Grace, Lorna Lee, Sammy, Caitlin, Michelle, Tenmei, Adya, Aram, Aaron, and Grace number 2, new patrons. Thank you.
Welcome to the party, Aaron and Grace. Thank you for your support, as along with everybody else who has been a supporter already. We really appreciate it. So, today, let's talk about the movie Ballerina. Jessica, what is that movie about?
I got you. The IMDb synopsis reads, grieving the loss of a best friend she couldn't protect, an ex-bodyguard sets out to fulfill her dear friend's last wish, sweet revenge. It is directed and written by Lee Chung-hyun, who has done a few other movies and one miniseries, but the movie that I have watched is The Call from 2020, which also probably fits really well with the spooky season because, and it also stars the same female lead, Jung. Okay, hope I don't mispronounce her name. Jung, I've already got it wrong. Jun Jong So plays Okju in Ballerina, and she was also in The Call, but she was I don't know if I want to spoil it. I'll just say she was in The Call.
She's in the movie The Call.
Yes, and it's really good. And it also stars Park Shin-hye from The Heirs.
Okay, got it.
Memories of the Alhambra. So those are some other shows from Park Shin-hye. But this movie, Ballerina, also stars Kim Ji-eun as Pro Choi. I just made a TikTok about this man. he's like ridiculously hot in this movie. There is no reason for it.
No
reason. The shots that they have of him, like, cleaning the car, washing the car.
Yes,
I know. Do you remember these?
Yes,
like,
I did.
I was like, what is going on?
Why? But, okay.
Yeah, okay. Fine. So, Kim Ji-eun, you might have seen him in Flower of Evil, which we have also covered on the Daebak feed. He is the... Oh, I don't want to spoil it. Anyway, he's in that show. And he's maybe not so good... For Jung Jong-so, the female lead, you might have seen her in Burning as well, the 2018 movie.
Ah, okay.
Do you remember that movie?
Yes,
have
I do. It?
Okay, yeah, she's in Steven it. She's Yen. The girl. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I kept looking at her. I was like, where is she from? And I couldn't quite place it. And there we go. Now I have an answer.
Yeah, there it is. And we have Park Yoo-rim plays Min-hee, and then we have a few other really noticeable or notable people in here. We have Park Hyung-soo as Myung-sik. He's the pharmacist. We have Kim Moo-yeol as the CEO. You might have seen him in Forgotten. Yeah, Forgotten with Kang Han-ul, which is also like a thriller that I just watched the other day. Like, this is incredible because I was like, oh my God, all these people together. And then we have Kim Young-ok as sort of a bit player. She's the gun dealer. This is the grandma that we see in every single K-drama.
Ah, got it.
I love her. Actually, you've seen her because she was also the old housekeeper in Boys Over Flowers.
Okay. Boys Over Flowers. Oh my God.
I know.
We can't rehash it. We can't.
No. We don't have to. But if you want to hear our take on Boys Over Flowers, you got to scroll all the way back in your podcast feed on the Daebak feed. It's episode 1. I'll go ahead and give the critics consensus because the Rotten Tomatoes score based on seven reviews so far is 100%. And then the audience score is also 100%.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this tickles us because we're constantly looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score for our weekly movies on Always a Critic, and it's never 100%. Even great movies.
Yeah.
Never 100%.
The best movies ever. No. Like, no. 98 is what you can hope for.
Right.
And, no.
Like, Rotten Tomatoes has its own issues, and, like, well, I don't... Whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, 100%. So, Rico, what did you think of this movie?
So, I was watching the movie, right?
Oh, Lord.
I saw the runtime of 1 hour 33.
Yes.
And I was like, oh. Okay.
I was so like, bless.
Yes. And somehow it still felt long.
Get out.
I think this is a bad movie.
Get out.
This is a bad movie.
Okay.
I think, so here's why I think it's a bad movie. I think the reason why it's bad is that the movie does not really give us full reason to care for the lead character. I think that they do not such a great job of making you care for the relationship with her best friend. They do flashbacks, you know? And the way the movie kind of treats it, like, you can't tell if it's a best friend or if it's, like, a lover. Like, the way,
right,
you know,
right.
They kind of dance with that. I think the surrounding antagonist or the villain, I'm talking about, like, the CEO and, like, the gang-related stuff,
mm-hmm.
doesn't really, like, integrate itself well into the movie. I think that they do it kind of haphazardly. I feel like this movie is all style, no substance. Because you know what it feels like? And I kept getting this feeling is that the movie looks like it was shot as a music video.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the movements, a lot of the lights, a lot of the types of things that you would see like in today's current iteration of music videos, that's how this movie was shot, which in a lot of cases, it looks cool, you know? I think that it left me wanting more in mm-hmm. terms of the action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's enough action in this movie it's supposed to be a revenge action movie, and it kind of falls short on that. There's not enough of that either, and with the action, the way it's shot, it's way too many movements. So it's like you can't even appreciate like the full on like fight scenes all the way through. So overall, I was having a hard time enjoying this movie. I was like looking for reasons to really enjoy it, and I could point here and there, but for the most part, I just sat here and I was like, well, that was a movie. And so what did you think, Jessica?
Okay, so when you said you didn't like it, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But then I kind of just agreed with everything that you said, because I think it's really beautiful to look at. And it reminded me a lot of the recent John Wick movies.
Yes.
Where it had like a lot of that neon binary lighting.
Oh, for sure. And they're definitely drawing stuff from John Wick. But when you start drawing stuff from John Wick, you naturally draw the comparisons as well.
Uh-huh. And because you have this sort of invincible central character with a bone to pick.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that her performance is so, like, stiff. Like, she gives us maybe one or two moments of like emotion, but for the most part, she plays it like very flat in terms of she's not going to give us anything in the face, like in terms of like emotions, emoting, her demeanor as a character is just no intimidation at all. And that's by design in the movie. But even after the audience knows that she is like a badass killer, even then it's kind of like, well, I want to see more of her being this badass killer, and mm-hmm. we don't really get it. So so that's one of my complaints.
I think for me, I was hoping that she was the ballerina.
Yes. That's another thing. That
was
surprising.
I was really hoping, and I thought that she was the ballerina going into it, but she's not.
She's not. She is getting revenge for the ballerina.
Correct. Right. There is an element to this that is real. I can't remember what documentary it was, but I watched this documentary in South Korea. From South Korea. Not that I was in South Korea and watching this documentary, but it was from South Korea. And it was this serial killer who was doing what the villain was doing. in this movie, who was like a well-off dude. He was, you know, maybe this is spoiling it. I'll just leave this for the spoiler section, like what the real life story that I watched that I was like, this is very similar.
Yeah.
I'll leave that for the spoiler section. But anyway, I felt like it had roots in reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could definitely see.
But bringing in the gang or cartel or whatever you want to call it was a little bit jarring, because you're like, oh, he's not this one-off dude. He's got this whole infrastructure behind him. And in my mind, I was expecting it to get way more intense. Like, oh, now the hunt is on, because he's not alone. It's not this one-off dude who she's trying to get revenge on. It's everybody else that's backing him. Like, she has to dismantle the whole thing.
Right. The movie kind of wants to lead you there. But I don't think it really has a...
It's just underwhelming.
Yeah, exactly. It's underwhelming. It's not a satisfying way of getting there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, with what you're saying, his character, once it's revealed that there's, like, an entire cartel, I thought, like, we were being introduced to, like, the big bad. And it doesn't really go that way. But we'll talk more about that in spoilers, though.
Mm-hmm. Did you like the inclusion of the high school student?
The high school student, her name is... how do you pronounce it?
Xin Sehui?
Yes.
That's her real name.
Right, that's her real name.
Yeah.
I see what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. Is that they were trying to integrate, like, a naive, helpless type of victim, type of character for the bodyguard to be in charge of and to look after. But it didn't really amount to anything good or anything well.
Like, you think that's going to light a fire in her to really dismantle this cartel, human trafficking gang or whatever, and she's just kind of chill about it. Like, there's no reaction from her.
No, it's not even like they don't even do a good job of, like, making it so that she sees the ballerina in her, like, you know, drawing comparisons.
Right. Yes.
Because that would have been good to do, you know,
that she, like, maybe reminded her of her friend.
But they don't do a good job of doing that. I wish they would have. And then you get more sympathy for her relationship and the way she's dealing with everything going on with her friend, her old friend, the ballerina. So, one thing I will say, that the acting in this movie kind of ranges.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's good performances. Like, I would say Pro Choi, the character, as a villain,
he's
menacing.
Yeah.
Like, he
is... Like, you like that dude.
Yeah,
like,
I think he was really good at being what he is. Just, like, this sadistic, like, into some weird and illegal and crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it in this terrifying way. When he looks at, like, women, he has, like, this really disgusting, like, look about him that was very convincing, like, as a villain. So, shout out to him. I did not like Munchik, the pharmacist.
You didn't like the pharmacist?
No, I didn't like the pharmacist.
Bro, you didn't recognize him? That's one of the brothers, the evil brother from Crash Landing on You?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was trying to place him, and I was like, I know this dude, but, like, yeah, that performance was so, like, I don't know, it kind of felt like over the top. Just like...
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, well, ooh, here's another question about the way we watched the movie. In terms of watching it, how did you watch it? I know Netflix, but, like, subtitles, dub, how did you go about it?
Bro, so I don't know why, but, like, Netflix is constantly pushing dubs on me.
Yeah.
So I press play, and I watch a lot of Korean stuff on Netflix. It knows me. I never do anything dub. I never choose dub. I always choose subs. And it started talking, like the guy in the convenience store started talking and it was dubbed in English. And I was like, what the hell is this? I had to stop, put on the sub, make sure it was good, and then play it again. Did that happen for you too?
It did, but I did not change it.
No!
I left it. And to
you watched the dub?
I watched the dub with subtitles as well, which was hilarious to me because they would say something, but you would read something different. So that was funny.
You're
but
killing me, Smalls.
I'm not, you know, taking You're points away from me. There. I'm not because that... And they just dubbed it. But it was so funny to me that some of the things that they said didn't quite match like the subtitle itself. Like they would change around some words or stuff like that. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. Jessica watched it the correct way, which is no dubs with subtitles. And I watched it with a dub and subtitles.
I cannot. I don't know what to say. By me.
That was a rookie mistake by me. But yeah, there's a couple things that like just kind of don't really make sense to me as to why they happened in the movie, and we'll talk about that in spoilers as well. But what's something that you wanted to mention before we get into that though?
I think it reminded me a lot of other movies, and maybe that's the biggest crime I think of this movie is that it is extremely derivative and sort of, even if it's derivative and it's doing similar things as other movies, I think it's just not doing anything different, original, memorable.
I agree with that because when you look at some of the movies that it kind of reminds you of, like, you know, we're talking about stuff like Atomic Blonde, Colombiana, Peppermint. Oh, God, I forgot that.
Do you remember Peppermint?
Peppermint. Yeah, it's with Jennifer Garner.
Yes.
You know, The Villainess, Lady Vengeance. There's like quite a few movies where we have a female protagonist who is, you know, an assassin, a trained killer. Also, you can kind of draw some comparisons. Obviously, we said John Wick. Taken, The Man from Nowhere. Like, there's a lot of movies that it's kind of drawing from, but not doing it, like you said, not really changing up the cliched manner of these type of movies. And also, just doing a poor job of copying some of those cliches. Because if you want to do a copy of something, you got to do it at least at the same level of the thing you're copying. And I don't think this movie quite does it. So I don't want to lambast this movie fully. Like, I think there's some innovative stuff, and watching like some of the fight scenes are cool. I think there's a sense of a threat, and you can feel like the griminess of like the villain, and I think it's very effective. That's really good for the movie. You need someone that you just hate and just cannot stand in a role like this. And they did a good job of portraying the villain like that. So I want to say that before, you know, we get into spoilers and all that.
I think if you're looking for a similar movie where, you know, you got this really cool, interesting, very silent and stoic fighter, you know, assassin, what have you, going after a larger cartel, like system, something like that, it's The Man from Nowhere. I adore that movie. I don't have a single bad thing to say about it. It is amazing. And if you like, oh my God, maybe like a combination of Taken and Leon the Professional.
Ooh, okay.
That's what The Man from Nowhere is.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good combination to have. Yeah. That's a really good combination.
I know. And it's not that you can't have a stoic, like, main dude, because that is The Man from Nowhere. He's barely cracking any sort of emotion. Same with John Wick. John Wick is like a robot for a lot of the movie.
Yeah, he is.
Right? Like, yeah, he's not really... Okay, so I'm not... I don't think that necessarily her being this cold, unfeeling, like, central lead is the issue, because they do it in other movies. Mm-hmm. I just think maybe they just didn't build her right with the writing.
Yeah. This is probably, and it's usually, this goes against how I feel, but this is a movie that I think needed just a little bit more time in terms of, like, just establishing her character a little bit more. The movie doesn't
fully... You know what I like, too? You know what I like is that there's usually a person in one of these movies that hypes up the central
person. Yes.
Like the protagonist, right? They have it, like, consider Rambo. The colonel comes in and he's telling everyone in the town and the police force, you don't know what you're doing. You need to back off now. He's trained here. He's trained there. He grew up in the dirt. You don't understand. He's gonna mess y'all up. And he's hyping up Rambo. And you don't really understand what Rambo's capable of until this person comes in and says, you're gonna die if you keep coming at this person.
Yeah, and I think that...
And there wasn't a hype person.
No, there wasn't.
In this, like, movie at all.
Even with something like Taken, right? Once the authorities get involved and they start looking into the past of, like, Liam Neeson's character, mm-hmm. they do the whole profile of, like, oh my God, this guy is X,
you know. That's the same for The Man from Nowhere. They start looking into his background and they're like, the files are sealed. Like, that's that sort of stuff that builds him up, right? Right. Plus John Wick, you have John Leguizamo that's like, whose car did you steal?
And it's like,
he's like, no. He slaps the kid. He talks on the phone with the dad and he says, well, your son stole John Wick's car. And the mafioso goes, oh, like all that, like, is character building.
Yeah. You know? And like the way they would talk about him and like call him the Baba Yaga and mm-hmm. just like all this crazy stuff. Yes. It builds a mythology.
Like the lore, you know?
Lore and mythology. That's what was missing from the character. Like, if we would have known, like, oh shit, don't mess with this person, you know, but like they kind of just toss it in a brief conversation of like, oh, I work security detail, right. You know, that's not impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, what is impressive is like if we had a character like, are you hanging out with so-and-so? Mm-hmm. Do you know who she is? And like, mm-hmm. you know, like if they would have done something like that, then right. you kind of get a sense of like, oh, that's
all they had to do to put the hype person in there is have the CEO character. Ooh. Who's like the opposite of the villain, right? The other hat coin, the other side of the coin. Mm-hmm. Be like, who are you trying to kill? And like, it comes into view that it's this girl and he knows about her or he's seen her in action or something like that. And he's like, you don't know what you've done. You could jeopardize everything we've built, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's all you need.
Yeah, exactly. You need someone who is afraid of the character before right. we know why you should be afraid.
Yes. Yes. I think I've caught something there. Plus, you just fix all the fight scenes because the fight scenes were very Nolan-esque.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about this in spoilers for sure. Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk spoilers for Ballerina right after this.
Hey, you want to come in?
All right, let's go ahead and let's talk spoilers for Ballerina. We left off on mentioning Christopher Nolan taking a stray here, just randomly. But there, yes. So the big moment was the fight in the hotel between our hero and our villain. So Okjo versus Pro Choi. And bro, the cameraman... I hope they paid him well. with the amount of just like following all the different directions that every every single punch and kick had to have a camera movement.
Right.
Yeah, it was too much because like you can't. It was not cohesive enough to be able to be like, oh, what the hell are they doing right now?
It was disorienting.
Like I was having a hard time. Like, did that punch land? And by the time like I thought that thought of did that punch land, you know, they're doing something else, and I'm just like, wait, what happened there? I like, it was having a hard time with it.
I know, but the one thing that I liked about that fight is how it started. Because he's like groping her, she's supposedly drugged, and she's pulling a knife out from under the pillow, and they don't show like what happens when she lunges forward.
Right.
With they don't the do knife. The
immediate thing.
And they show his face in the mask because he's wearing like a BDSM mask, and he's got crazy eyes.
Oh my God.
And you see some blood fall on the bed, on the white sheets of the bed, and you're like, oh, did she get him? They pan over. It's his hand. He caught the knife.
Which is.
And you're like, crazy. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, like, that's a cool moment.
That was a good start. Yeah.
That's a good start to it. Then, you know, that entire fight, like, there's a couple of moments that I was like, oh, that looks cool. But then at the same time, there's like too much that is just disorienting. Then we get like added characters come in, like where we get the guy with the shotgun, like the with the weird haircut. Like what was I thought it was like a wig, bro. Dora the Explorer, bro. Seriously, can you say shotgun? But like he comes in and starts shooting up the bed. And, you know, there's some cool moments where she's able to, you know, take him out. And then. Yeah. Okay, so here's one thing. The guy with the
chainsaw.
Yeah, the guy with the chainsaw. He comes, he starts running, and there's a moment where the camera is like from the outside looking in as they're running towards each other in the hallway. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like something that you kind of would see like in Scott Pilgrim when they do like a surreal look at like the, you know, whatever's happening. Mm-hmm. And then it's like completely cut short with the door opening.
The door opens. Yeah. And then insert our high school student who is a victim of trafficking and who is like basically stuck as a sex slave.
Right.
In this hotel. Right.
Which this is something that we should talk about real quick is that the big thing about this movie is that the villain is part of this cartel that, you know, they deal in drugs, but they also deal in sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And Pro Choi, in particular, is basically, like, using the girls for his own fetishes and his own thing that he's doing. And not only that, he's into BDSM, he's into whips, chains. They excite him, as Rihanna would say.
I was waiting for it. Not the Rihanna reference.
But like you mentioned this earlier in just the conversation. When she opens the drawer and
So I wanna make it clear that like if you're into BDSM, fine. That's your thing.
Again, but Rihanna gave you permission. So
Rihanna gave you permission. So she's investigating in his house when he's out of the house. And she opens this big armoire, and it's full of BDSM toys and whips and
ball collars gags, like and all this stuff.
And you're like, okay. Like, I think us as Westerners, we're like, all right. So he's BDSM.
Right. Like, he saw 50 Shades of Grey.
I don't want to speak for an entire country, but perhaps that moment is really shocking for Korean audience.
It could be. I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe it is. Talking out loud. It was, for me, it was when she opened the drawer and it was an organized, labeled row upon row of USB drives that I was like, it's like the air got sucked out of the room. Yes.
Yes. So the part that he was recording these women, drugging these women.
You had to know at that point that it was without their consent, that it was, you know, he was sexually assaulting these women.
How often do you run in a movie, do you see when somebody has a flash drive that it's a good thing?
Right, right. It's always this like terrible thing.
Like, what's on the flash drive?
And, right,
like,
right.
It this could be ominous. Like secrets that a government doesn't want to get out.
Right, it's right, right. Like, there's never been a good USB drive.
I don't think so. I do not think so.
Right.
Anyway, so.
So anyway, this his crime of drugging these women and videotaping them reminds me of it was either a serial rapist or a serial killer. And it might be a combination of two different criminals that I'm thinking of. One had taken video, like it was videotapes at that point. When I watched this documentary, they were saying how all of the police force had to sit there and watch these videos and try and identify the victims. And nobody wanted to come forward because then it was very similar to how they were enticing or coercing these young women into being sex slaves. It's like, oh, well, then we'll show all of this footage that we have of you to your friends and family, and it's going to ruin your life.
Right. Which is
so insane. Yeah, so that was the impetus, that was the big hang up in the case, in the real life case, was no victims wanted to come forward because it would ruin their life. They had kids, they had a whole family, they had no recollection that this happened to them because they were drugged at the time. So it was very jarring and shocking and traumatic for them, and they didn't want to press charges because then their name would be out there. And I don't know if you had ever heard of this type of, you know, exploitation.
Not like, well, I think the only thing that comes anywhere close to something like that here in the United States that I've heard is just usually what we deem as revenge porn. Which is kind of a guy will release like videos and pictures of, you know, stuff that was sent to him by a girl. And then, you know, as an act of malice, as an act of revenge for whatever stupid reason he deems that it's, I should do this. That's the only comparison that I have. And that's super embarrassing for the girl in that situation, because, you know, those weren't meant for everyone. That was meant for the person she sent them to. But in the case that we're talking about in the movie, and in the case of real life circumstances, this is something that was against their will, you know. But even in that case, it's still, you know, shocking and traumatic to have that video go public for everyone to see, you know.
Right, so that's why that high school student was like, that's why I'm here, because otherwise they would send this video out. Like, it doesn't matter that she's a victim,
right?
It doesn't matter. Like, it was like, you know, this victim blaming,
right,
part of victim blaming that is very evident throughout this movie and throughout real life. Like in real life, this happens too. And I wish that I knew the name of the serial killer or the name of the documentary. I feel like it was the Hwasong serial murders that I watched a documentary on. And the serial killer's name is Lee Chun-jae. And he was in his 20s when he was committing those murders. Yeah, but don't quote me on that. It might have, this sounds terrible to say, but it might have been another serial rapist killer. So I was wondering if you had seen that before, because it felt so familiar to me.
Not specifically that.
Interesting.
I mean, I've definitely heard of stories of, like, you know, sex trafficking rings and stuff like that, but I've never heard details of that, where they're kind of blackmailing the victim, you know?
Right. They were blackmailing the girls into staying in this world, in this life, which is really sad. I don't know if they maybe tried to do too much in the movie. Like, they had, so they had this guy who was serial, what do you even say? It was a sexual assault slash taking video of them.
Yeah.
Drugging them. I mean, what is that? Like three or four different crimes.
And he had so many of them.
And then on top of that, he was in charge of the human trafficking.
Right.
Or a portion of the human trafficking for this gang.
Which, crazy stuff. When they introduced that in the movie,
right?
I was like, oh, this is like something, this is more. And I thought that it would lead to something bigger mm-hmm. towards the end, which... So I want to take this as a transition into how the movie establishes the villains, but mm-hmm. I don't think it does it very well. So Pro-Choi is not the big bad.
No.
The big bad is like the cartel, the mafia of this group led by CEO Joe.
Yeah, CEO.
Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he has like this menacing... he's very... cold, business-like type of leader, you know, where it's like, you know, I'm gonna take over that for you, and he's like, "What? What do you mean?" And he's like well, he laughs stuff off unclear, because you think
it's unclear what he was doing. Like Pro-Choi was doing drug business on the side outside of the regulation of the gang, right? Right.
Exactly. Okay.
Then what was the drug he was producing with Myung-sik, the pharmacist? Was that those little fish-shaped ones? Yeah,
that's exactly what it was. Because they show...
What was inside the fish shape?
They never say. They never say what it
okay,
is.
Okay, okay. I thought I had missed it. So I think it was like a reefer, like a, you know what I'm saying? Like
right, because the best...
Day rape drug.
Right, the best inclination that you get is... towards the end when she walks into the lab where they're growing the stuff and the plants there, some of them look like weed, but it could have been a little bit more. It could have been something along the lines of some type of hallucinogenic. But I think it's more along the lines of what you're saying, which is some type of date rape, because a lot of the, you know, just tying the two together. You have these drugs
because, with the sex trafficking. Because, I mean, the people that showed up for the drug drop
mm-hmm.
on the bridge.
Yeah. They
did not look.
They just looked like
yeah,
dudes who were like just dudes. Trying to get some drugs.
Like one guy was on a bicycle.
Yeah. So.
No, they don't look like they showed up in a nice like vehicle right. or anything. They look like, I don't know. And then. I think he threw out one of the plastic fishes after he had used it, right? On her, presumably her drink.
Right.
When Okju goes to the hotel with him.
Yes. So, yeah. So then I believe that it is a date rape type of drug.
Which, what the hell does that say? That they're, he's producing a date rape drug in the shape of like a little plastic fish and advertising it as sushi.
Right. Yeah, like...
Because she asks, I think in the DMs, in Insta DMs, he asked her, how many soy sauce packets do you want? Indicating like how many, well, what's your order?
Right, exactly.
And she just says, oh, I just want one soy sauce packet. And he like leaves the chat.
He leaves the chat. He's like...
Something about the one soy sauce, one date rape fish packet... That was like, okay, this is not a real, yeah.
Well, what triggered me to that being more like a code word was when you go to the page and he's like, I'm doing sushi orders. I only take Bitcoin. I was like, oh, yeah. There's some yeah. shady shit here. Like right. anybody who's like, I only take Bitcoin.
Red flag.
Red flag.
Yeah.
Red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So... I want to talk about the gun dealers that we meet in this movie.
Bro, before we do. Oh, yeah. Wait, no, you know. Let's talk about the gun dealers. And then we'll circle back. Let's circle back on the romance.
Okay. Yeah, we definitely have to. So when it comes to the gun dealers, I found it to be somewhat superfluous the way they introduce these characters a bit kooky, like, oh,
right. We're it was kind of fun. I liked it.
It's a little fun, but I will say that it is an easy way to explain, like, Chekhov's guns and flamethrower.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes,
and I was just 100%. Like, oh, okay, so we're going to get a flamethrower in the end somewhere.
I died laughing when this little grandma, Kim Jong-ok, they had her with a flamethrower.
Yes.
She's like, this was meant to kill wasps. And I'm like, what is going? I still had so many questions. And then she just fires the flamethrower. And it's going like 100 feet farther than they are. I was dying of laughter.
I couldn't help but think of the line from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when Leo's testing it and he's like, anything we can do about this heat? And the guy's like, it's a flamethrower.
But that is it true that that was an improv? Like, not improv, it was but that was him that was in him. Character talking, like Leo DiCaprio asking the person, what can we do about this heat because it's so hot?
Yeah, apparently that was. Anything we could do about this heat? It's a flamethrower.
But he was just talking in character. Oh, my God. I love it. It's a flamethrower. Okay.
But, yeah, I think it's a clever way. It brings some levity to a dark topic that was happening in the movie in terms of everything going on. So it was nice.
Do you know why it's so kooky, I think?
Why do you think?
Well, you know that guns are illegal in Korea.
Okay.
You didn't.
I didn't quite know that, no.
Guns are that's why everybody got knives.
Oh. That's why
does that
people
make a lot
are
of
always
sense?
Pulling out knives.
Yes.
Got it.
Even
the
gangsters are pulling out knives.
Knives.
Because this is inordinately difficult to get a hold of guns in Korea.
Okay. So
which is
the
why
fact that these
she's...
people have like these old guns and everything.
Right.
Okay.
It's clicking.
It clicks.
Okay.
Got it.
Right. That's why I didn't find it that like outland. I mean, it was outlandish, but I didn't find it outside the bounds of this really can't happen in a story about this revenge that's about to happen. So.
Got it. Okay. Let's go ahead and circle back to what we wanted to mention because I mentioned this earlier.
Yeah, I agree that the girlmance, I thought they were lovers, or at least Okju thought that they could be more, that she maybe loved her, loved Minni, the ballerina.
Mm-hmm. The movie kind of dancing with
it. It's dancing with it, yeah.
Yeah, because maybe it's just the way it's viewed in Korea. I don't know if same-sex relationships are something that is as prevalent as it is in the United States?
I would say no.
Probably not. So
probably not.
Showcasing that in a movie, you know, maybe is not their priority, but they definitely hint at it, the color scheming whenever they're together of, you know, dancing between blue and red, making it purple and pink.
The binary lighting.
The binary lighting. Like, it's really obvious that Okju has an emotional and somewhat romantic attachment to the ballerina.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the movie knows when to pull back on, like, we're not going to show you anything. You know, we're not going to
confirm or deny.
Exactly. We're not even going to show them like really hug that much. Like,
right.
They're going to get close in a photo and, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's as close
as
we'll get.
The photo booth stuff.
Yeah, photo booth stuff. Like photo booth. When you think photo booth in a movie, that is like romantic stuff happening between two characters usually.
Correct.
Yeah. Or the beginnings of a romance. So the fact that these two characters did that. And you're telling me, oh, you know what it is? It's those women who later in life, they're constantly traveling with their best friend.
Oh.
I put that best friend in quotations.
Get out.
It's like, oh, yeah, this is my best friend, Nora. We've been friends for 10 years and we go everywhere together. And it's like,
Stop with the face.
Yeah, you guys are very close now and friendly.
Okay. So I fully believe that I saw a meet cute.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
Yes, at the bakery.
Once you get the cake. The cake shop.
That's a meet cute.
That's a meet cute.
That is easily something that you would see in a romantic comedy.
She goes in for a cake and the ballerina recognizes her. She's like, we went to middle school together, whatever class, and is excited to see her. And she's like, oh, like kind of taken aback. They eat afterwards. They go out.
They go
celebrating her birthday.
Celebrating the birthday. They go to like art exhibits together. They go to the beach together. Uh-huh. They go swimming together. You know, like.
Bagay Seba.
Yo, telling me they're not a couple? Like, come on.
Come on.
Best friends, my ass. And anyway, so the movie dances with it.
I think I would have enjoyed the movie more if they had just said, oh, they were lovers.
Yeah.
And I would have been like, yes. Yes,
they are. She's avenging the loss of her love.
Yeah.
Like, that is an easy sell. But then
they don't even make it make sense of why. How long were they out of touch? What the hell was Okju doing? Why did she quit her job?
Yeah.
Like, they don't go... Like, John Wick is the same way. Like, what is he doing day in and day out? Nothing.
No. But you understand... Because he quit his job. Right. He quit his job. He retired. Mm-hmm. Like, you understand why he did it as well. Like, he found the love
of his life. By the time you get to the end of the movie, you understand, like, what his job was.
But in this movie, you still don't fully comprehend...
What was she doing?
What was she doing? How did she...
She was guarding VIPs? Okay, Kevin Costner, tell me more.
Yeah, like, I want to know more about the world that you were in. So it makes sense that you are this amazing killer in the world that we're watching.
Mm.
But we don't get enough.
I don't understand how... Because here's the rub for me is even if they... Fine, they don't admit that they're a lesbian couple. Fine. But then how the hell does the ballerina know that Okju can exact revenge for her on her behalf? How does she know? Does she know that she had all these skills? Has she ever seen her in action? Does Okju ever open up and tell her about what she did as a bodyguard?
I mean, maybe
besides saying I was a bodyguard.
But
we don't see that. I don't get it. You know,
this movie can be summarized with this sentence. We didn't get enough. And you can say that about plot points. You could say that about the action scenes. You could say that about quite a few things.
Yeah.
We did not get enough. And it's a shame because I think the movie has the potential to be like this like cult classic following that you know, when people start saying, oh, have you seen this Korean movie?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be in that sentence, but...
And here's my thing, too, is that when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this is that movie that they are doing in the John Wick franchise. I thought it was going to be that spinoff, The Ballerina.
Right. That was also confusion there.
Yes.
Because they titled it after something we know is coming, you know.
Right. A movie that's coming down the line. A spinoff. For those who don't know.
Yeah.
John Wick, 4 movies in the franchise, but it's getting a spinoff called The Ballerina, and it stars Ana de Armas as the ballerina. And if you saw John Wick 3, Parabellum, there is a scene where there's a ballerina in the, I think it was...
The theater in New York. It was like a Russian ballet. Yeah, it was still in New York.
Okay, I thought he was in Belarus.
Not yet. Not yet at that moment.
So, anyway, that ballerina is... The subject of the spinoff, anyway.
Right. So,
long story short, I thought this movie was related to the John Wick franchise, and it's not.
And so then when we found out that it's not, we thought, oh, they beat him to the punch by doing something similar and calling it Ballerina.
Right.
But, like, the main character is not the ballerina.
I wish that she was the ballerina, and that's how they had they started their lesbian romance, was that they were both ballerinas in the same company.
That would have been interesting.
You know, like Black Swan type shit.
Yeah, some Black Swan stuff. Although I did get some, like, you know, like hints of Black Swan, you know, early on. Like the way the camera was moving around that central ballerina character.
Right.
Like, it was, like, kind of intense. And so, like, it, you know, in my head, I was like, huh, Black Swan? You know, so. Okay.
That was perfect.
I don't know if I have anything else. Do you have anything else?
Oh, my God. We forgot to rate this out of 5 soju bottles.
Yes. Yes, we did.
This will be the last thing we do, and then we'll get out of here.
Okay. So what did you rate it out of 5 soju bottles?
I would have rated it a C, like on a grade level, because we've been doing grade levels on Always a Critic podcast. But like for soju bottles, I guess 2.5.
2.5. That would put
maybe 3 if I was, you know.
Being
generous. It's so pretty. Like, it's so pretty to look at, right?
Right. Gotcha.
I don't know. And the soundtrack was really good.
Yeah, soundtrack was pretty good as well. I think I'm doing it 1.5.
Get out.
Yeah.
Get 1.5. Out.
I have too many complaints about the movie is the problem. Like, I saw the potential. That's why, like, I had the first bottle and I was like, okay, we're rolling. And then, you know,
the because movie. I liked the intro sequence, too. I was really excited after the intro sequence, which we didn't talk about. The convenience store fight.
Yes. Great opening sequence for our character. I loved it. And the movie kind of just like slows down for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. An hour and a half and for some reason you slow down.
You know, I have to say that for some reason you slow down. I liked that the ballerina was at the end of the movie because they had that flashback scene where she was like, I want to be reborn as a fish after I die and whatever. And then at the end, you see the ballerina under the water.
Under the water.
In the sea.
Very, very nice.
I love
nice
that
touch.
Visual. Like, very it's very nice poetic and like, touch. I don't know. It worked. That worked.
So that is our review.
Yeah.
Ballerina.
We had too much fun with this.
We
it's
did.
Supposed to be spooky season, and we're like laughing our way through this freaking movie.
Now, something that is spooky is human trafficking. Totally spooky.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
But this movie, not so much. Not so much spooky.
Well,
not
once
so
they
much
had
scary.
Like the CEO character with this severe middle part.
Oh yeah, think? Like his hair
he
just
had it like slicked back.
I was like, huh, that's a choice.
That is
a
choice
for your hairstyle. Okay, so
all right, we're done.
This has been our crossover episode here on Always the Critic / Daybok K Rambles.
Yeah,
thank you for joining us. If this is your first time on either feed, go ahead and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. If you want to go ahead and follow us on socials for Always the Critic, you can go to Always Critic Pod. For Daybok, you go to Daybok Pod. And so you can find us anywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. And if you've done all that, go ahead and check out the Patreon. Patreon.com/AlwaysCriticPod. You'll be supporting both shows in that same Patreon. Do what all of our other supporters are already doing for as little as $2 a month. You could check us out there with more content for you guys. Jessica is really good about putting out Daybok content there. So check it out for sure. I keep saying that I need to do more and then I don't.
And then you don't.
I know.
What's going on, Rico?
I know.
Get it together.
I need to get it together. But I will get it together. So that has been our episode. I'm Rico.
And I'm Jessica. And this has been a very special episode of Always the Critic Movie Podcast and Daybok K Rambles Podcast. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. My shoes make the kick a little right flash. Big titties, I'm lonely, but I'm a dumb kiss.
같은 머리카락들이 on my back.